Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. HagmanReport.com. That's two N's on Hagman. HagmanReport.com. Please bookmark that website and also follow us on Rumble. Please subscribe to Rumble. Yeah, it's just like YouTube, okay? In other words, you make an account. It's very simple. Seconds. And then hit the subscribe button on Rumble and you'll be notified when the show is up. So it's really a good thing to do, and it's very simple. And also, we're on Brighteon as well. If you check our show descriptions, go to HagmanReport.com, open the shows, choose an episode, and you'll see all the links to Brighteon and all the links to Rumble, and it's a really simple thing to do. All right, it is America Held Hostage, day number 83. It is Monday, April 12th, 2021. A lot of things to get into. The warm-up for the post Chauvin trial in Minneapolis occurred this weekend. In case you didn't know, a lot of violence there because of yet another police shooting. We'll be getting into that shortly. And then, of course, the southern border, the illegal alien smuggling center in Texas, is empty, yet the Biden regime is paying a ton of money into two hotels. It's pretty interesting how that works. And, of course, you've got your fear-promoting, flip-flopping fascist Fauci, the Fuhrer of fear, telling us to get the shot, get the vaccination, which is not a vaccination. It's an experimental gene tool. But it's still not okay to eat indoors, inside, even if you get the jab. It's still not okay to hug your grandma, grandpa, whatever. And I understand that. And as a matter of fact, I believe, and you can check our program from last week with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny on Thursday, and also the 4-minute briefs, news briefs, about what is going on with those. And hopefully we'll have some other people on to talk about that, including people like Dr. Judy Mikovits and some others. So just hang in there with that. Okay, I'm gonna, if it's Monday, John's joining me, riding shotgun. John Moore from, well, thelibertyman.com, thelibertyman.com. But before I get to John, I wanna hit one thing that really is kind of flying under the radar that you folks really need to know about. Because when you look at things going on at the southern border, when you look at things going on with our economic, malaise, the stagflation, remember the, 1979-1980 Jimmy Carter era. Think about this now. If you were alive then, and if you weren't, pick up a history book. Well, it's difficult to pick up a history book that really has got the true facts in there, but talk to someone who lived through that era. The Jimmy Carter era. The I think it was July 15th, 1979 speech about energy, for example. Energy conservation. And then, of course, wearing sweaters, dropping the thermostat in the winter, and the gas line. You get the idea, right? But the inflation, people were actually taking out mortgages when the interest rate was 18, 19, 20%. You want to see what's happening? It's coming again. So here's what happened this weekend that's not getting a lot of play that I really want to start off the show with, and then John and I can talk about this. And really, please pay attention to what's going on. This was this weekend there was a phone call made by 100 CEOs of corporations, 100 top business leaders who met to discuss stopping donations to the political hacks who back restrictive voting laws of politicians. I inserted political hacks. Who back restrictive voting laws, including those in Georgia. Now, the Business Insider has this. It's one of many. But really pay attention to this, because when you start looking at things, and that's my dog, studio dog here in the studio, things happen, and delivers to the studio, so no worries. But she's upset about this too, frankly, to give you an idea. She's upset about this too. 100 top business leaders meet to discuss halting donations to politicians who back restrictive voting laws, including in Georgia. Now, some of the takeaways here. Top business leaders, they had a Zoom call this weekend to map out their response to these new voting restrictions. All right. Now, who initiated the phone call? When you start digging into who participated and who initiated the phone call, you'll find out it's a Rothschild. All right. That should surprise no one. Rockefeller, Rothschild, what's the difference? Two wings of the same bird, but I'll just leave it there. The Wall Street Journal reported that the CEOs were asked to sign a statement opposing restrictive voting legislation. See, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I like saying that. Here's the thing. All right. My wife today had she returned two items at a local store. All right. I'll just say the store's name, Lowe's. You know. She returned two items. And I bought one of the items, I think, a year and a half ago. All right. Never took it out of the box. And the reason was it was a shelf. All right. It was a shelf. So we were going to use it. Never used it. It was collecting dust. And it was like $19. All right. So she takes this and another purchase back, the recent purchase back to Lowe's. And the person there said, well, you know what? We're going to have to give you a store credit without the receipt for the shelf. So we're going to have to give you a store credit. She said, oh, that's fine. Go ahead. You know, no worries. All right. They require ID, a driver's license, nothing less than a driver's license in order to process the return and, of course, the issuance of a store credit. But these multinational CEOs, on the other hand, look at Business Insider. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com for this episode. These CEOs, they're saying, you know what? Nah, voting ID. I mean, ID for voting. How regressive is that? That shouldn't be. How discriminatory is that? All right. As a matter of fact, any political office holder who says that this is a good thing, we're going to halt their donations. Now, this is where the money is coming from. Understand this. Again, this is underreported, and people have to really understand how important this is. So you have more than 100, and this is a Business Insider, more than 100 CEOs, senior leaders on Saturday met on a Zoom call to map out how businesses should respond to these new voting restrictions that are set to be enacted in Texas and other states across countries, as I said, in Georgia as well, and especially in Georgia. And they came out with, well, we're going to stop giving the politicians who back these restrictive measures, we're going to stop giving them money. We're going to stop donating to them. If you propose, you know, ID, voter ID, or if you propose audits for the machines, or if you propose getting rid of the machines, if you upset the apple cart, we're not going to support you. Now, you might think, well, good. Stop the donations. And I agree. But the problem is they're going to repurpose or reallocate the donations to those people who are in favor of just opening the doors to voter fraud. This is the problem. You know, folks, we hear all the time, you know, Coca-Cola saying, you know, it's too white. Okay. So they're a woke corporation. We need to boycott them. We need to boycott this airline or this store. I understand that, but this is really the root. This is the root of that fruit. This is the root. Okay. This is the issue. Okay. So now. And Major League Baseball too. It mentions the Major League Baseball, Georgia voting law, Senate Bill 202, with the MLB pulling out of Georgia, and companies like Coke and Delta pushing back against these restrictive voting issues provisions. Okay. So it's all about the Benjamins. It's about the money. So who are these 100 top CEOs? Well, all right. So that's Business Insider. You can read on and you can find out who and the open letter and the 72 black executives of last month sent this open letter in the New York Times. It's a whole big deal. But let's move forward very quickly here. Let's go to Conservative Treehouse, because Sundance has done a great job with this. And this is really, I'm going to bring John into the fold here momentarily, but this is really what people need to understand. John and I were talking before airtime about this, and I think that it's really critical for people to understand. Corporations, the headline in Conservative House is this. Corporations, specifically multinationals, hate capitalism. Understand that point and things make sense. Now, let me repeat that again, because so many people get this wrong. Corporations, and specifically multinational corporations, they hate capitalism. Okay, there, I can see your head kind of cocking to the side like a dog trying to hear or understand what you're saying. And this is so important for people to understand. There is a disconnect amid the outlook of most conservatives when it comes to corporations and capitalism. Now, there's a tweet that featured in this article at Conservative Treehouse by Sundance. It's a great place to recognize the distinction between the objectives of multinational corporations and their hatred of capitalism. So it's this. The tweet is this, and you can see it on screen. If you're driving, don't look. Or if you're driving, just listen. I'll read it to you. Again, in response to what happened this weekend, confirmed first of its kind call between more than 100 top corporate leaders on Saturday focused on how to respond to proposed changes in state voting laws. Participants included top leaders of airlines, media, law, investment. Okay. And he names some in the, bottom part of that. Sundance and Conservative House is first. They were not corporations on the call. That's not an accurate description. The assembly was a group of multinationals. And I agree with that. And John Moore even takes it further. It's not about really hating capitalism. It's about hating competition. I'm going to, John's going to weigh in on that here momentarily. Some very, very, very good insight into this. So, but the assembly was a group of multinationals discussing their objectives, goals, and outlook on politics. There's a difference between an ordinary corporation and a multinational corporation. I'm a corporation. I'm a subchapter S corporation based in Pennsylvania. And that's a much different, I'm a much different entity than, we'll say, Coca-Cola or some other corporation, some airline, and multinational in nature. Okay. It's a much different, but multinationals hate capitalism. They hate competition, as John Moore, thelibertyman.com, will tell you. Now, there's a brief video, and you may say, my goodness, we don't need a video on this. Yes, I think you do. When I saw this video, it kind of clicked in my head. Okay, I understand. The top three common myths of capitalism. When you watch this and hear this, if you're listening to this on audio, please pay attention. It's 3 minutes. Because, and when you're listening and watching, think of things like BLM. Think of things like, the restrictive voter restriction. Think of things like, calls for boycott, cancel culture among them as well. Think of the late night talk shows. Think of the people. Think of your own family in some, certain cases. But expand your mind when you hear this, and you'll understand. I think at the end of this, you'll understand. Go ahead and roll that when you're ready, and then we're going to bring John Moore on and go from there. Go ahead.
If we look at the history of the world, a huge fraction of the improvements in standard of living have come because private businesses have created new products, have given people jobs, have generated profits that raise people out of poverty and allow them to live fruitful and productive lives with reasonable standards of living. We can have much more of that, and it will have beneficial effects around the world if we step back from the excessive regulation and have a much more capitalistic system. My name is Jeff Myron, and I'm Director of Undergraduate Studies in the Department of Economics at Harvard University. I want to talk about three myths about capitalism. The first is that being pro-capitalism is the same as being pro-business. Nothing could be farther from the truth. point of capitalism is to make sure that businesses have to compete vigorously against each other, and that benefits consumers. It's not good for the businesses per se, because they have to work really hard. So many businesses understand this, and they hate capitalism. They are constantly trying to get government to erect various rules, restrictions, regulations that help them, but that are not in the interest of the consumers. So pro-capitalism is good for consumers. That's whom we're ultimately trying to help. A second myth is that capitalism generates an unfair distribution of income. What true capitalism does is rewards people who are productive, people who work a lot of hours, people who have a lot of talent, people who come up with good ideas. They get big rewards under capitalism, and people who don't do those sorts of things get less. The one negative one might be concerned about is that some people have very little skill. They are not able to earn very much left on their own, and so very reasonable people support some anti-poverty spending. But that's completely different than interfering with capitalism, regulating prices, limiting quantities, imposing all sorts of things on businesses. Those make the economy less productive, give us a smaller pie, and make it even harder for us to operate programs which help that help those who are less fortunate and because they were unlucky. The third myth is that capitalism was responsible for the recent financial crisis and the recession. That, again, is almost exactly the opposite of what is true. First of all, nobody who's being intellectually honest thinks that we had unbridled or serious capitalism before the crisis hit, before the subprime buildup occurred, before we had all of the housing problem. We had enormous government interventions that subsidized risk, enormous government interventions that encouraged an overinvestment housing. If one's going to try to draw any conclusions, it seems to suggest much more clearly that interfering with capitalism generates financial crises, generates recessions, because what we experienced was directly related to the incentives for excessive risk-taking, the incentives for overinvestment in housing that were created by government. The private sector responded to those incentives, so of course the private sector can't be completely absolved of being involved, but in the sense of causing, it was the bad policies that caused it, not what the private sector or capitalism did on its own. Most importantly, whenever government bail out people who took excessive risk, they encourage people to do more of that in the future. And we unfortunately went a huge way in that direction via the TARP and via all the Federal Reserve policies, which helped Wall Street and the risk takers not have to pay the true price for all the excessive risk taking they engaged in.
All right. America first. Those two words, are like, a silver bullet to a werewolf, okay? America first. This is why the pushback by the multinational corporations. With me, John Moore, thelibertyman.com, after an excessively grueling long intro. John Moore, how are you, and what did you think about that?
Well, I would slightly change the verbiage of the college professor. And as you stated a few minutes ago, Doug, what I refer to is what the is this matter is predatory capitalism. Let's look at some things that have been going on in this country for decades, especially since World War II. Major corporations such as Monsanto conducting lobbying efforts that, and the dairy industry is really bad for this also, that force the small farmer, the small producer, out of business with excessive regulation that have no basis in reality in terms of serving any useful purpose other than forcing the small operators out of business. Here locally, there's a family down the road from me. They've been in the dairy business since World War II, and they were ready to expand, but the EPA regulations prevented them from doing so. It would have been cost prohibitive, regulations which made no sense in the real world. So they went out of the dairy business, and they're now they raise cattle for beef, not for milk. That's just one local example. But we see this all over the country, and Donald Trump was getting rid of literally thousands of regulations all over the country. That's one of the reasons we had the biggest economic boom ever seen, with the lowest employment rates ever recorded since they've kept records, just before the COVID kicked in 13 months ago. I would mildly correct the professor and say that what these major corporations want is not an elimination of capitalism. They want an elimination of competition.
And you know, it's kind of funny because in the comments section at the Conservative Treehouse, it says, one of the commenters says, I'll be even more precise. Multinationals hate competition. That is why they perfectly align with the state in every case. It's all about the power. And that reflects your sentiment. I think that's pretty accurate.
Right. Well, the basic definition of capitalism, and I'm no economist, is raising money to engage in business, the capital. And they do that by selling stock. These Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies aren't about to stop issuing stock to raise capital. What they want to do is to eliminate companies that compete against them. In fact, there was shortly after World War II, there was a inventor, an automotive inventor named Tucker, and he came up with an automobile that was 20, 25, 30 years more advanced than anything anywhere on the planet. He had an air-cooled helicopter engine in this vehicle, and he had many other features which did not become common in American automobiles for about 20 years in the future. And he was sued for basically for taking people's money under false pretenses. And in the movie, which documents, it's kind of a docudrama, in the movie that documents this, he's in the federal courtroom, and he's facing some very dire consequences for taking people's money under false pretenses. And he had, I think it was 20-plus automobiles lined up outside the courtroom that the people who were opposing him said did not exist. So, which I thought was kind of humorous. But that was reality. And that was 60-something, that was more than about almost 70 years ago, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing new about this. Nothing new about this at all, of the big players wanting to eliminate the little players. Something we talked about before the show started also. And I just found this out about 5 or 6 years ago. The women, and it was all women as far as I know, who were who wanted to abolish alcohol, they, the prohibitionists, they were basically regarded in Congress as a bunch of silly women that nobody paid attention to until they got a massive influx of cash for to conduct their lobbying efforts with. It turns out that cash came from Rockefeller, and here's what was happening. In the early 1900s, from 1910 to 1925 or so, there weren't service stations all over the country. They simply were few and far between, especially in the rural areas. So the farmers and the ranchers were making their own alcohol, and Henry Ford met that demand by making the Model T Ford a dual-fuel vehicle with a spark advance that would be a little lever, if I can hold this up here, a little lever on the steering column that you'd move up and down to change the spark advance, depending if you had alcohol in the tank or gasoline in the tank or a combination of alcohol and gasoline in the tank. The vehicle would run properly because you changed the spark advance as you needed to on the steering column. That was not acceptable to John Rockefeller. He wanted only gasoline in these vehicles. So we instituted the most bizarre, crazy law that you can imagine. The rest of the planet must have been laughing at us hysterically when we had a constitutional amendment, of all things, which is even more bizarre, to ban the manufacture of alcohol.
So that's what that was all about.
That's what that was all about. And it was a... there's families still drinking champagne and paying for yachts and airplanes from the fortunes, including the Kennedy fortune, by the way, from the fortunes made from Prohibition. Tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. In fact, the father of a friend of mine was a bootlegger. My grandfather was a bootlegger. He made beer until the members of the local cuckoo gang in St. Louis made him an offer one morning. He couldn't refuse, and he was out of the beer business that morning.
And you walked with a limp after that. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what that was all about. It wasn't anything to do with the United States Senate, the United States House of Representatives, and the president wanting to improve American society. No, it had everything to do with money and the oil lobby, which was basically one man, John David Rockefeller.
You know, there's like two scenes in my head I've got playing. One is Nancy Pelosi with a straw at a, opening the gas tank where you put the nozzle in with a straw if it was alcohol. So that was Nancy Pelosi there. And the second one is Barney Fife, destroying the still of the two little old ladies in the mountains. But anyway, so folks, there's some good history right there. But it's about competition, isn't it? Really?
It is. It is. In fact, it's only been about 4 or 5 years ago, Doug, that the pipe that went from Canada to Detroit under the lake there that carried the whiskey was discovered. Can you imagine how much whiskey you could pump through a 1-inch pipe? Every 24 hours.
Okay.
So, it's incredible. My grandfather was an adult. My dad was a boy when Prohibition was in effect. But it changed this country in many ways. One of the outcomes of Prohibition was when it ended, we had all these treasure agents with nothing to do.
Because good point.
Alcohol was legal once again. And that brought about the including firearms into what the Treasury Department did with the National Firearms Act of 1936, I believe it was.
36, yeah, something like that. Yeah. Okay.
And so we're still living the consequences now. Here we are 80 years later. Mm-hmm. Still living the consequences of John Rockefeller wanting to eliminate the competition with gasoline.
It's the Rockefellers, it's the Rothschilds, it's the really 13 family bloodlines, who people look and blame the government, John, and I've got to say this, it's not the government, it's the people behind the government, it's the people, it's the 100 multinational CEO corporations. It's that money, the lineage from that money that's really responsible for
what we're saying. What you're describing, Doug, is the very definition of fascism.
Yes.
People get these bizarre ideas about what fascism is, what communism is, and attribute characteristics that really don't exist. Here's what fascism is. It's a cooperative effort between big business and big government to accomplish mutual goals. That's what fascism is.
It's a consolidation of power too, right?
Well, obviously that's part of it. It's not necessarily bad or evil. It certainly can become bad and evil. It has that definite possibility. And the restriction of trade eliminates from the market products that could be less expensive and better because of the monopolies that come into place. So communism is where the government owns the means of production. That's what communism is, where the government owns the means of production. Under fascism, the means of production remains in private hands, in the private sector. And both isms, can become, very destructive and very deadly, as we've seen the past 100 years, haven't we, Doug?
Yes. Now, I submit one thing to everyone, to you, John, and to everyone else. Think about so competition breeds innovation, I believe, right?
It does.
All right. So look at the past, 40, 50 years. Where has the innovation here in this country, in America specifically, taken place? You separate out the service industries, anything service related, forget about that. So we've lost our manufacturing base, with the exception really of, I would argue, with one.
Well, Donald
thing.
Trump was bringing it back, though.
He was, which is why, again, the America First, we can't have that. We've got to have cheap labor, don't we? I mean, in order to, the, okay, so, you have cheap labor that raises the profits because of the multinational corporations. Why put something, you know, why manufacture stuff here in the United States when we have to deal with the higher labor costs and we can get it done in sweatshops over in, you know, a third world?
Well, it's more than just labor costs. What was put in place, quite a few, not just Obama. Obama played a big role, of course, but many, going back to the first Bush administration, many administrations had put in regulations that made it advantageous to take manufacturing offshore. And it wasn't just a matter of cheaper labor overseas. It was a matter of restrictive, expensive regulations with the Environmental Protection Agency and other regulatory agencies that made it cost prohibitive to do business in this country, to do manufacturing in this country. The definition of a first world country is they do manufacturing. That's the basic definition of a first world country, is they do manufacturing. That was being taken away. Donald Trump was bringing it back, doing things that Obama said couldn't be done, that many economists said couldn't be done, and a majority of it was removing regulations. The cheap labor in Asia did not go away. What went away was expensive regulatory matters that were actually encouraging and rewarding companies to leave this country and do their manufacturing overseas. The American worker is so productive that they could compete shoulder to shoulder with the cheap Asian labor if you take away the horrible regulations that make it too expensive to manufacture in this country.
Okay. And let me just interject here. You mentioned the EPA as being one of the chief regulatory agencies. Just so people understand, especially the younger listeners and viewers, the EPA was brought into existence in December of 1970 by executive order Nixon, December 2nd, 1970. And the architect really behind that, the brainchild behind that, was the globalist Kissinger in the Nixon advisory role. Okay, so you're exactly correct. The cheap labor, but the regulations here, the oppressive regulations here in this country, are killing off the business so yes, I'll put a period there.
Nothing that Donald Trump can do that would change the cheap labor in China, Vietnam, other countries. But what he could do and what he did do was eliminate expensive, burdensome regulations.
And he did do that. Yeah.
He did, and manufacturing was coming back. What was the quote from Obama? Something about it would be a fantasy or a fairy tale or something if manufacturing came back.
Yeah, wave a magic. You can't just wave a magic wand.
A magic wand. Yeah, that was the quote. Wave a magic wand to bring manufacturing back. Well, Donald Trump did wave the magic wand, and the magic wand was getting rid of expensive, unnecessary regulations. Another 4 years of Donald Trump and imagine, you know, you and I both know, our listeners, Doug, in February of 2020, just 14 months ago, we had the lowest rate of unemployment for our African Americans, the lowest rate of unemployment for Asian Americans, lowest rate of unemployment for Hispanic Americans, and of course Caucasian Americans, since they've kept records. And the economy was on the cusp at the beginning point of a boom that is without precedence, absolutely without precedence. That's where it was headed in February of 2020. And then the make-believe non-pandemic, the make-believe pandemic, was being featured on every news outlet in the country, every mainstream news outlet in the country, radio stations, TV stations, and so forth. And that brought everything to a screeching halt. I was just mentioning earlier today, Doug, how I never thought I would live to see a day where I was grateful to see lots of traffic. Typically, we don't like to see lots of traffic because of all the, it's paid more careful attention and so forth, more dangerous. But a year ago this month, Doug, and I know you'll agree with me, I would be traveling during what would be the normal morning rush or the normal evening rush from 4 to 6 p.m. on these highways. And I see maybe one car in front of me, maybe none behind me. And it was really scary, Doug.
It looked like a scene out of the road, you know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Empty highways.
Empty highways.
And that was truly scary.
Yes. And I don't mean to talk over you, but you're exactly right. And you mentioned something before I forget about this. I want to just punch this in here. You know, people talk about, in fact, there was a headline, I think it was in one of the aggregation sites, about more trillionaires were made during this scandemic than at any time in history. You know, the members of the three comma club, whereas more businesses, local businesses, were crushed. Okay, people have to understand that. Okay. The southern border crisis, all of this is connected. If you follow the money in the scamdemic, the Fauci stuff, President Trump's America First, and you know, propelling our nation into the stratosphere with respect to the lower bad job numbers being lower, unemployment and such. So all of this is connected, and we're seeing this unraveled deliberately by the puppet Biden. He's a puppet. Mr. Marbles, he's a puppet. So, but the people behind that calling the shots are the ones that are unraveling everything Donald Trump did. So I just wanted to punch that in there to add to what you're saying, because I think that people need to really understand the big picture behind this and who's really behind this. And you're right. You know, it's 14 months ago, it looked like, a neutron bomb went off and office buildings were shuttered and, you know, sagebrush going down the street, and you were driving your Triumph, you know, with no windshield, no windscreen to be on, you know, and you were the only one on the road going, oh, what happened? Bomb go off. I get it. You're right. Now we're seeing some traffic, but why now? Is it because miraculously things just, you know what, it's, you know, we flattened the curve. Is that why? No. Nope. Nope. Nope.
Well, what was the flatten the curve thing supposed to be for 2 weeks?
Yeah, 14 days.
14 days.
Yeah. Yeah. How'd that work out for y'all?
Well, I just got a note from a friend of mine. She's a elementary school teacher, and she got unfortunately, I couldn't talk her out of it. She got the a COVID shot about 2 weeks ago. Now, one of the students in her class has the COVID, and she's probably going to be back on another quarantine. And I wrote her an email, basically. In fact, it'd be kind of interesting to look at this email and read it to the audience. It's all that long, and here's what I said to her. The headline on the email was, "The Emperor Has No Clothes." Number one, there is no pandemic. The previous protocols defining what constitutes a pandemic changed in 2009. Under the original protocols, this COVID-19 matter would not be a pandemic. Number two, we've had contagious pandemics for centuries. What we've done for these pandemics is quarantine the sick, not the healthy. Number three, if the vaccine, which is not a vaccine, works, why would the vaccinated person have to be quarantined? Number four, if the vaccine doesn't work, why get it in the first place? Last but not least, number five, are there adults in charge?
Good one.
I mean, I have to ask, Doug, are there adults in charge? You know, what we're seeing is ignorance driven by fear.
That's it.
And it's nationwide.
You know, I'm just so excited because it's Monday and I didn't talk to anyone for, you know, the whole weekend except for the Patreon meeting last night. And thank you for, folks for joining me. But yes, you know, are there any adults in charge? There are, but you're right in the fact that it's a fear-based, media blitz. Have you noticed, John, if we really had a pandemic, would we really need the media blitz behind the,
of course not.
Of course not. What a bunch of crap.
Now let's go back to 1981. That's what, 40
really
years ago?
Not. Yeah, that was a bad year.
I was working full time for a law firm. I was specializing in homicide, defense investigations and working with some great lawyers who are still friends of mine. And, so SAID things pops up and, it was and is a contagious 100% fatal disease. Contagious 100% fatal disease. The guy in charge of the American response was Dr. Fauci. He did not quarantine anybody who was sick. And I'm asking the lawyers, you know, these guys all have 7 years education past college. Yep. Why in the world aren't they quarantining the men who are sick with a contagious, fatal, 100% fatal disease? As opposed to what we've got now, Dr. Fauci in charge of a disease that kills 0.23%. Now, yep. Something's really broken with this.
You're
100% the same
right.
Guy,
yep.
Dr. Fauci, the same guy, not a different doctor, the same guy did not quarantine men who had a fatal contagious disease, and now he wants to quarantine healthy people that have no symptoms at all.
That's right.
And am I the only guy that's, I mean, I'm sitting out here a 45 minute from the first red, yellow, and green traffic signal. And I know this. You know, am I the only person who sees this?
No, you're not, but you're the only, or you're one of the few, who are speaking up because
what's changed in 40 years about the why you should or should not quarantine somebody.
You know the answer to what's changed in 40 years. The 40 years, the globalist scumbaggery have had the opportunity to castrate the men of this country, to infiltrate academia, all levels, to infiltrate our court systems, our political offices. We have been neutered, effectively neutered, the men have. And common sense, common sense is out the friggin' window. I mean, it's sad. You know, and how many people, John, how many people will wear a mask because, well, it's easier because I don't want to get into it, you know, with anyone. So I'll just wear a mask, but you know, it's not my hill to die on. I'll die on this hill. No, you won't. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah, continue. Yeah, well, you're right. If Fauci's dirty, man. I mean, if somebody says, well, trust Fauci, he's a scientist. He might be, but Fauci, Gates, that whole cabal, they are killing us. They want us dead. How many people really get that? They want us dead. There was a, John, about vaccines, you know, Alex Jones does a great job in really exposing this, but the four manufacturers of the vaccines right now, I had taken some notes here. So listen to this. I just want to toss this out here. The four major companies who are making these vaccines, and they're not vaccines. Pardon me for using that term, but I'm going to use it so people understand what I'm talking about. They have never brought a vaccine to market before this. Never. Not one of the four. They are serial felons, specifically Pfizer and AstraZeneca. And, well, and our, Johnson & Johnson is a serial felon and never brought a vaccine to market before. So Moderna, which is short for modernized RNA, hence the name, for years, has tried to but never successfully brought any product to market, and then they get this major cash infusion from the government in order to keep trying. So all of these places have really paid out they've paid out tens of billions of dollars in damages previous to the in damages related to other products, I should say. For example, Celebrex, some other examples, but there you have it. So,
the baby powder sold by Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah.
That's a very, very recent one. Well, Doug, we talked previously about Dr. Mike Yaden. That's Yankee Echo Alpha Delta Oscar November. Dr. Mike Yaden, former vice president at Pfizer, the guy who was in charge of their research. He's now done a video presentation, a video interview. It's not the best video, not the best audio, but it's clear enough to understand what the man's saying. And he's warning everybody that the COVID vaccines, which aren't vaccines, are probably going to be used to murder people, for depopulation. That will be on my website at thelibertyman.com, I believe, by the end of the day. I have now 6 COVID panels. These are sections on my website. It'll be in panel number 1 in yellow highlighter, Doug. In our careers, Doug, as homicide detectives, we have a technical term we call smoking gun evidence. And this is the smoking gun evidence. This man's credentials are every bit as good as Dr. Fauci, every bit as good, maybe even more so. And for a man like him to go public in the manner in which he's gone public, issuing a warning that all COVID shots should be stopped immediately, is highly unusual. Men of this stature, men who get picked up in a bodyguard-driven limousine every morning, be taken to work and brought home from work because they can't risk somebody that important to be driving on the public roadways. Men like that don't go public. They simply don't. They remain quiet and they enjoy their very comfortable retirement that they've worked for all their life, going fishing or whatever it might be. And they don't go public, but this guy did, and God bless him for doing so. You know, you take one look at this guy, Doug, and you say, well, he's obviously not a Montana rancher. You know, this is a man who spent most of his life indoors doing his work, being quite successful, becoming quite successful at what he does. And for whatever reason, I don't know the reason, I don't care what the reason is, he's gone public stating as loudly and clearly as he can on as many platforms, and you and I should get him on our shows, Doug, quite frankly.
We can.
Proclaiming that the COVID shots are going to kill people. So we really need to pay attention, I believe, to what Dr. Yaden is saying. We need to warn people that have not yet got the COVID shot not to get it. Once you've got it, it's too late. Now, our mutual friend Mike Adams is saying there's going to be prions in these shots. Also, already is prions in these shots, I should say.
Yeah.
And what Mike Adams says is, if one prion is present in these shots, you're on the way to having what's called mad cow disease. It's spongiform encephalitis is the medical term, which basically turns your brain into a pile of mush, quite frankly. And once you're vaccinated, you can't be unvaccinated. And what Mike Adams said in a recent report he put out is there is no treatment. There's no allopathic medical treatment. There's no homeopathic medical treatment. There's no herbs or treatments or anything else that can unvaccinate you. That does not exist. Now, the only thing left is prayer. Now, prayer can cure anything, and I'm not discounting prayer on one hand, but most people don't understand that or believe it. So they're going to die. They will get the spongiform encephalitis, and they'll have a slow, miserable death while the people caring for them, if they've had the shot also, will be undergoing the beginning points of the same thing happening to them. All this begins in about 6 months, according to Mike Adams. Maybe it's 4 months. You might be relatively healthy for a year or two, but there's no escaping it. Once you've received the COVID shot, you're basically the term they use in prison for men who are sentenced to die. You're a walking dead man. You're a walking dead woman.
You know, John,
that's what you are.
Yeah, I had Steve Quayle and Dr. Sherry Tenpenny were on Thursday. And folks, if you go to HagmanReport.com, if you look, and you'll find a 4 minute and a minute and a half video that I actually took out of the interview. And what you're saying there about the prions and about the, 6 months, Dr. Tenpenny said, look, it seems like both Mike Adams and Dr. Tenpenny are on the same page. And I'm not even sure this would be necessary, but once the person who took that jab is, faced with or comes across either another flu shot or perhaps a strain of the coronavirus, the body will just go in overdrive and, kill itself essentially. And about the brain blood barrier too. Man, I'm telling you, that's a really big issue. But, Johnny, people are just lining up for this and saying, oh, I feel so good. Thank God I can get back to normal. But
well,
boy,
it's worse than lining up, Doug. They're signing up. And I know people have done this. I'm a Republican committeeman, and I'll be at my central committee meeting tonight. And there are several people there, including people who have advanced degrees, shall we say, and that have signed up at 2 and 3 different locations. They're not lining up, they're lining up online at 3 different locations to get the COVID shot as quickly as they can. So lining up means standing in line at one location, but they're using the modern age to line up at 3 locations at the same time to see which one will get them there first.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. It's sad. It's disappointing. I know I'll be losing men and women that I'm related to by blood and marriage, close friends of mine, people I love and care about. I know they're going to be gone in 2 years or less. I know that. Nothing I can do to change it. And you're everybody listening to us and watching us right now, Doug, they're in the same situation. I'm looking into at buying a home here in the not too distant future, but I already know that home prices are going to drop off precipitously when these people start getting the prion. And we should back up a bit, Doug. The cytokine storm, which you were describing earlier, and that's what it is, storm is separate from the prion matter. It's two separate matters.
Correct.
And people are looking at both. It's just a matter of tossing a coin as to which one they'll be dealing with first. And it's an absolute disaster. It's by design. Now, at the I was a instructor and range officer and safety officer at a tactical rifle pistol class over the weekend. In the evening discussions, we had 9 students, which included 5 doctors. We had 1 medical doctor, 1 dentist, and 3 chiropractors. And you can imagine the evening conversations we had over dinner. They were fascinating. And and one of the guys said, John, it looks like this was set up in advance. And I said, well, it was. And the SPARS document clearly demonstrates that every bit of what we're dealing with was pre-planned and set up in advance, wasn't it, Doug?
I'm sorry, you cut out there, brother.
I said the SPARS document demonstrates and gives evidence that what we're dealing with the COVID matter was pre-planned and set up years in advance, wasn't
yes.
it, Doug?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that SPARS document up because, and I think, again, I give credit to Alex Jones for really pulling that out. We do have the SPARS document, I think, on at the ready or perhaps to show people. But if you haven't read that, what can we say about this SPARS document? There it is right there on screen.
What we can say. First of all, the timeline is now, not
that's right.
4 years in the future.
Correct.
The timeline is now. And, one of the doctors, one of the 5 doctors said, this is the plan to depopulate the world, isn't it, John? I said, well, yes, it is. That is the plan. And he says, well, maybe this is yet we've been looking for an explanation. Many of us, and it's heard of me, to myself, Doug, you, and Steve Quayle, and Mike Adams, and others. What is the cause of the die-off in the Deagle document, the Deagle report?
Right. And I've often wondered that.
Well, maybe this is it. Killing people off by war is not very efficient and very effective at all if you want to kill off a large part of the population.
Correct.
But what they're doing with these COVID shots would be a way to accomplish that goal. What do you think, Doug?
Well, you know, okay. Yes, yes. And so that there's the depopulation part. There's the control part. I mean, this is a gift to the globalists. This is a globalist gift that keeps on giving. In no matter how you want to describe it, a couple of things. One thing, boy, I mean, it's so much just rushing through as you're talking in my head. You're making too much sense, John. You really are. Folks, you're listening to John Moore. TheLibertyMan.com is his website. I would urge everyone to go there and listen to his radio show too. Every day of the week, that's Monday through Friday, John Moore, TheLibertyMan.com. There's his website right there. It's linked in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. But, it's kind of like an information download every weekday. And this website has some great articles, great news pieces, as well as, of course, John's got some fantastic products. I swear myself by the, Force Cleaner, which you can scroll down.
Energy Cleaner.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you. Yes. Energy Cleaner. So
Force is with you.
Yeah. May the Force be with all of you. Yes. sorry about that. Yeah. Again, my brain is really going in 100 miles an hour. I want to show you this because John, the evil behind this. I was looking for, often evil is overused. I was looking for a synonym to evil, but the evil behind this. At a recent meeting, I don't know whether you saw this or not, and I'm not gonna. We can't speed up this at all, nor should we, because the speed of this woman, her talking to where is it right here? She's talking to a school board. I did send you that, didn't I, Eric the Tech? Orange County. Okay. I don't know whether you saw this or not, but real quick, it's like it's like 3 minutes. It's Ms. Lee Dundas. Did you see this?
I don't think so, Doug.
Okay.
No, let's watch it.
Yeah, the evil behind this. Orange County, California, the Board of Education, they want to secretly give the jab to school children, okay?
Oh, my God.
Now, think about the evil behind that. Don't tell the parents. And, okay, so Lee Dundas, who is a prominent human rights attorney, addressed the Orange County Board of Education. Now, she had to get a whole bunch of information in like 2.5-3 minutes. And she talks really, really, talks like Ted Brewer does in this 2.5 minute clip here. So let's go ahead and play this and listen to her concerns, because it's coming, if it's not already, it's coming to a school district near you. Go ahead.
Lee Dundas, human rights attorney. Late last week, I am informed a meeting occurred between Orange County Health Officer Dr. Clayton Chow and Orange County Board of Education Superintendent Al Maharz, during which time they apparently tried to find a way to, quote, sidestep and entirely remove informed parental consent for the COVID vaccine and also turn Orange County school campuses into vaccination centers. The COVID-19 vaccine is an experimental medical protocol authorized under the Emergency Use Authorization Act, and as such, you cannot mandate it for anyone, nor can you sidestep informed consent. There is a reason that kids cannot smoke, drive, drink, have sex, vote, or die for this country, and it is because the law says they lack the capacity to understand those decisions, and that applies here more than ever. Hear me loud and hear me well. We will not be morphing our school campuses into COVID vaccine centers for delivery of an experimental medical protocol that killed every damned ferret in the last animal study they did until such time they had to abandon that study, and then they didn't even do the study this time around because we are the study. The last time humans launched a plan like this to conduct experimental medical protocols on vulnerable populations was in Joseph Mengele's direction. He was an MD known as the Angel of Death. Okay? And he was part of the SS, and in 1943 he was assigned to Auschwitz, where he saw an opportunity to conduct gene research, quote, focused primarily on children with no regard for the health or safety of the victims. This is off the internet. You can Google it. You know what else is gene research? Experimental COVID vaccines with the trans gene inside of it. If you don't believe me, go pull the EUA application for the J&J shot. I come from a long line of Eastern Europeans, Hungarians, and Romanian groups that fled the persecution of the Red Terror communist death squads in the early 1900s, and those of us who didn't make it to America ended up facing the Nazi death squads in the lesser-known Holocaust that was the Romani Holocaust. There is a reason my daughter is named Katia. Her Romani great-grandmother was Caterina Cioma, and I, for one, have not forgotten the lessons of our history. The Third Reich did not end with experiments on children, nor when those children died. The Third Reich ended in 1946 when we put the doctors who committed these human experiments on trial in Nuremberg, and then we put them to death. It ended with the adoption of the Nuremberg Code so we would never repeat the sins of history. And it states, and I quote, the voluntary consent of this human subject is absolutely essential. Dr. Chow and Dr. Maharish, you are hereby on notice. Last week, you appear to have knowingly hatched a plan to sidestep and or violate international, federal, and state law, not just the Nuremberg informed consent language, but also the black letter law of the EUA, as well as California state law, which punishes, and I quote, the willful failure to obtain a subject's informed consent by imprisonment in county jail for 1 year or the imposition of a $50,000 fine or both. Through the planned insertion of experimental gene-altering protocols onto the very children, you were elected and charged with protecting. And tonight we are asking the Board of Education for an immediate letter of censure to these individuals. And if they don't resign, for an immediate notice of termination. And that letter also needs to go to the professional boards because they have no business being in these positions. So help me God, the people of Orange County will hold this policy to account.
Your time is up.
I'm aware.
She's a ball of fire. All right.
Now, can you imagine being a fly on the wall, or you know, a part of a Zoom call with her and Dr. Ted Brewer, our friend Dr. Brewer? I mean, they both talk fast, but she had to get all that in. To you know, in fairness,
well, Ted doesn't talk fast in private.
I know.
Ted's been at my kitchen table twice. I was his house guest for several days last year, and in private, he doesn't talk that way. But when he needs to, he can.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, though. Yes, yeah, and God bless him. Austin comes on every week here, and we talk. But wow, Ted, when he wants to make a point, he can get a whole bunch of information.
Oh yes,
that was amazing. I thought
that woman is amazing. She's brilliant. She knows her stuff, and I hope that there will be a positive effect come out of it. Because I know, and I started pointing out the Nuremberg war crime tribunals a year ago, Doug. I started saying in March of 2020, these vaccines are already in the refrigerators, which we don't know, we may never know, but that's my opinion. So God bless this woman for what she did, and I hope it stops cold in its tracks. You know, these schools can't give an aspirin to a child without parental consent. They can't.
No, but they can change. They can give hormone crap. You know, the pre.
Well, legally they can't. I don't doubt that they're doing it.
I mean, now that cousin Ed is,
the child,
you know,
can't give permission.
Right, right. Look, I agree. But this, all of this goes to your point. I think that this goes to a couple of points you made. Number one, you know, what's changed over the last 40, 50, 60 years with our, you know, with our population. And it's the chemical castration, I believe, of men. I think it's this, the evil that is really behind this. But to your point about, what you said about Nuremberg and about this jab, my goodness, you know, it's insane to think that we have these manufacturers, these vaccine in quotation marks manufacturers, and the push for these, and the Deagle report, I don't think any of this is by accident at all. I mean, this is all by design. You're 100% right. I don't know. You talk about evil. Evil extraordinaire. I mean.
It is.
Oh, Gates. You want to see, this was really a well done. This is just a few minutes. To your point about the depopulation, about the Deagle video. Do you want to, I'm going to toss this up to make it up to you. We've got a video queue that's about 3 minutes. What's that? Oh, it's long. Well, we can start and any time you want to stop it, just yell stop. But this will give people background. Gates, the depopulation plan. This is well done. What's this? This is from John Bowne, right? I believe it is.
I don't know. It's on Band.
Yeah, it's a Band.video, but it really gets into the epicenter of the depopulation program. The stuff that you talk about and the stuff that we talk about. And again, John, feel free to say stop and we'll stop it and we can discuss or whatever. If it goes on too long.
Let's do it.
Okay, go ahead.
One issue that really grabbed me as urgent were issues related to population.
In 1998, Dr. Zabin became the founding director of the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population Control.
Dr. Zabin became the founding director of the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population Control.
So we see a lot of things that are going very well, things like reducing childhood death and First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
The problem is that the population is growing the fastest where people are less able to deal with it. So it's in the very poorest places that you're going to have a tripling in population by 2050. And so their ability to feed, educate, provide jobs, stability, protect the environment in those locations mean they're faced with an almost impossible problem. Here we can see a chart that looks at the total world population over the last several hundred years. And at first glance, this is a bit scary. We go from less than a billion in 1800, and then 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.4 billion where we are today is happening even faster. So Melinda and I wondered whether providing new medicines and keeping children alive, would that create more of a population problem?
And what the developing world does not need is more children.
Hmm. And I think that was the biggest aha to Bill and me when we got into this work, is we asked ourselves, of course, the same hard-nosed question you'd ask, which is, if you get into this work and you start to save these children, will women just keep overpopulating the world? And thank goodness the converse is absolutely true.
This is a very important question to get right, because it was absolutely key for me. When our foundation first started up, it was focused on reproductive health. That was the main thing we did, because I thought, you know, population growth in poor countries is the biggest problem they face. You've got to help mothers who want to limit family size have the tools and education to do that. And that's the only thing that really counts. Is spending $1 million on that last 3 months of life for that patient, would it be better not to lay off those 10 teachers and to make that trade-off in medical costs? But that's called the death panel, and you're not supposed to have that discussion.
Behind closed doors on this New York campus, a secret gathering of some of the world's most powerful people. Gates, Buffett, Bloomberg, Winfrey. It was like the Super Friends. Together with others at the meeting, including George Soros, Ted Turner, David Rockefeller, they're worth more than $125 billion.
That much money, that much power around one table. It begs the question, what were they doing? What were they scheming? Total world domination?
This group, together for 6 hours, was talking about charity, education, emergency relief, global health, the new Superman and Wonder Woman, the super rich friends, not fighting bad guys, but fighting for good nonetheless.
Apparently, one of the things they discussed was what each of them knows about what really works and what doesn't work, so they can concentrate their resources.
An epidemic, either naturally caused or intentionally caused, is the most likely thing to cause, say, 10 million excess deaths. Today, the greatest risk of global catastrophe doesn't look like this. Instead, it looks like this. If anything kills over 10 million people in the next few decades, it's most likely to be a highly infectious virus rather than a war. So let's look at each one of these and see how we can get this down to zero. Probably one of these numbers is going to have to get pretty near to zero. Now that's back from high school algebra, but let's take a look.
Probably one of these numbers is going to have to get pretty near to zero.
Now malaria's, of course, transmitted by mosquitoes. I brought some here so you could experience
John,
this. We'll let those roam around the auditorium a little bit. There. There's no reason only poor people should have the experience.
But did you come to reproductive issues as an intellectual?
When I was growing up, my parents were always involved in various volunteer things. My dad was head of Planned Parenthood, and it was very controversial to be involved with that.
My dad was head of Planned Parenthood.
The ultimate solution, the only thing that really lets us go back completely to normal and feel good about sitting in a stadium with lots of other people, is to create a vaccine and not just take care of our country, but take that vaccine out to the global population. We clearly need a vaccine that works in the upper age range because they're most at risk of that. And doing that so that you amp it up so it works in older people and yet you don't have side effects. You know, if we have, you know, 1 in 10,000 side effects, that's, you know, way more, 700,000 you know, people who will suffer from that.
Way more, 700,000 you know, people who will suffer from that.
The side effects for the Moderna vaccine sound concerning. We looked. After the second dose, at least 80% of participants experienced a systemic side effect, ranging from severe chills to fevers. So, are these vaccines safe?
Well, the FDA, not being pressured, will look hard at that. The FDA is the gold standard of regulators, and their current guidance on this, if they stick with that, is very, very appropriate. And
body language, John.
You know, the side effects were not super severe. That is, it didn't cause permanent health problems for the things that are. They, you know, Moderna did have to go with a fairly high dose, and so you know, to get the antibodies. Some of the other vaccines are going able to go with lower doses to get responses that are pretty high, including the J&J and the Pfizer. And so there's a lot of characteristics of these vaccines. It's great that we have multiple of them that
but
are
Bill,
going
everybody,
out there. And yes, I
you,
think
you know the data
the
better than I do. But the Bill, the data showed that everybody with a high dose had a side effect.
Yeah, but some of that is not dramatic where, you know, it's just, you know, super painful. But yes, there we need to make sure there's not severe side effects. The FDA, I think will do a good job of that, despite the pressure. But you don't have a choice. People act like you have a choice. People don't feel like going to the stadium when they might get infected.
But you don't have a choice. People act like you have a choice.
What else are we not listening to that we need to take action on now?
Well, the the idea of a bioterrorist attack is kind of the nightmare scenario, because they're a pathogen with a high death rate would be ticked. Now, the good news is, okay, I'm not trying to depress you, it's tough enough
Too late.
Most of the work we're going to do to be ready for pandemic two, I call this pandemic one, most of the work we'll do to be ready for that are also the things we need to do to minimize the threat of bioterrorism.
The economy is not going to be anything like it was. It's going to take a long time to recover. It's going to be, you know, people are going to be surprised at how slow and how fitful this is.
All
right, there it is. John, you were, you didn't say stop, and you were pretty quiet there. Body language is everything, I think. Let's see. Yeah, I thought I froze up there. Body language is everything, and if you had him on the stand, I would bet that you would notice that body language of Bill Gates, but that's just
me. His style is very animated, to say the least. And that one female interviewer, he was really struggling to come up with answers that sounded good, shall we say. That he shouldn't have had that kind of struggle. And the reason he's struggling is he knows he's lying. He knows that these vaccines are going to kill people, and he wants these vaccines to kill people. So, of course, he's struggling. That's expected. There's a special place in hell for him and Melinda Gates and Dr. Fauci and everybody involved in this scheme to murder so many tens of millions of people. And that's what's coming, Doug.
You know, John, when I first heard him in that one talk say, you know, vaccines to reduce the population, I thought he misspoke. I heard it and I thought, nah, it had to be a faux pas. But it wasn't. And he repeated that mantra throughout. And then, you know what else? If he was sitting across, I don't care if he's got a zillion dollars, okay? I would smack that grin right off of his face. I really would. It pisses me off.
Well, let's back up a bit. There's people who believe that what he meant was reduce the growth of the population because babies aren't dying. This is a very smart man. He's obviously has a high IQ. Obviously has a great vocabulary. If he meant reduce the growth of the population, that's what he would have said. But he didn't say that. What he said was reduce the population. And that's two entirely different matters.
Yeah.
Entirely different.
Yeah.
And the man said what he meant. And that's, you know, if you want to reduce the population, there's only two ways you can do that. You either sterilize men or women, or you kill people. Now, if you want to reduce the growth of the population, you don't do that first of all, vaccines don't help children live longer. What helps children live longer is clean water and proper sanitation.
Bingo.
These babies in these third world countries aren't dying for lack of vaccinations. They're dying for lack of clean water. That's what's killing them. And that's no secret.
Yep.
It's no secret at all. Vaccinations aren't going to help children live in the presence of dirty water. It simply isn't going to happen. I believe Bill Gates said exactly what he meant. And he meant to reduce the population, not reduce the growth of population. And words have meaning. I think it was Rush Limbaugh who said that probably hundreds of times.
Mm-hmm.
Words have meaning. And Bill Gates said exactly what he meant. He's a very bright guy with a great vocabulary, very little formal education, which really doesn't matter. And I believe he said what he meant to say, reduce the population. And at that level of Bill Gates and the New World Order, they look at human beings themselves as a virus on the planet that needs to be exterminated. The Deagle Report says that within 4 years, the United States population will be reduced by what? 75%, I believe the number was, the percentage. I may or may not be right on that, but it's massive.
Yeah, massive, I think you're pretty close.
It's biblical proportions. You know, there's no precedence since the Black Plague in Europe of this percentage of population dying off that I'm aware of. Are you aware of anything since the Black Plague of that nature?
No, not even close. No, you're spot on with that. And
who's going to die, Doug? We need to address this. First of all, who got in line first? It was the first responders, doctors, nurses, firemen, paramedics, policemen. They're the ones getting it first.
Yep.
Of course, elderly people, and they're, of course, the ones most at risk, and they're going to be the first ones to die off will be the elderly. That's a given. The next to die off are going to be the first responders, the men and women who helped this country run normally. When there's a fire, who are you going to call? When there's a heart attack, who are you going to call? When there's a bank robbery, who are you going to call? Well, if they're all dead and sick, you're not going to call any of them, are you?
No. Or no one's going to pick up on the other end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, I mean, there are so many places to go from here. With respect to this job, go ahead.
Well, let's talk about mitigation. We're down to about a little over 30 minutes left of the show.
Right.
Another, I've known Dave Hodges for more than 10 years. I consider him a friend. And Dave's been doing some excellent report concerning the true nature of the threat posed by Communist China and Russia both.
Yes.
There have been multiple public statements made by high-ranking Chinese officials, that they want America, and they want it with no Americans. That's their goal. And this would be a great way to help accomplish that goal. The Chinese are making very public threats right now, in April of 2021, to invade Taiwan. Do they want Taiwan? Of course. But what do they really want is to drain off American military power so they can't defend the United States. That's what they really want. And if a war starts with Taiwan, that's exactly what will happen. Making us far more vulnerable than we are right now.
I understand what's going on with Taiwan and the South China Sea. Do you believe that the United States is just going to allow Taiwan to be taken over by the Communist Chinese? Because it's going to happen.
We have treaty obligations to defend Taiwan, and those treaty obligations will be honored. It will drain off our military. We're very small. All the combat men in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines would fit in one large college football stadium that holds 80,000 people. Every one of them. That's how small our military. Now there's a lot of other people in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, but they're not warriors. They're not alpha male warriors trained to go into battle. They're administrative people doing all the things that need to be done. And they're great men and women doing the things that need to be done, but they're not alpha male warriors. All the alpha male warriors in the Army, Air Force, Navy, and Marines would fit in one college football stadium, Doug. Every one of them. And that's my reality.
Wow. Think about that, folks. All right. So now what? I mean.
Well, they'll be drained off to, of course, there'll be soldiers and military pulled in from Japan, South Korea, Australia, all our other allies in that area to help defend Taiwan under CETO. I'm not sure who's in the CETO alliance right now, the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization.
Right.
But they'll all be pulled into it.
So where we're at right now, Communist China is the chief influence operation right now. And you know, John, I'm not sure if I told you this. If I did, I apologize. But folks, you know this. In Wisconsin Christian News, exclusive to Wisconsin Christian News, is my recounting the Hunter Biden laptop. I received two copies. Okay. One shortly before the election and then one on or about March 8th. And the reason I mentioned this to you is because that laptop has over 100,000 text messages, over 150,000 emails, over 2,000 videos and pictures. But what it also has, John, is the Biden crime family incestuous relationship with the Communist Chinese Party. And I guess the reason I mention this is because had the contents of that been known prior to the election, I think it would have changed some people's minds. But also the fact that Biden and other members of our government are puppets of the Communist Chinese Party should frighten, should scare the socks off of most people, most rational human beings, because you better start learning Mandarin. You better start learning like General Tso's chicken or whatever that stuff is.
I like General Tso's chicken, and I am friends with two women who grew up in China. One is a doctor and a very good friend of my deceased wife, and the other woman is the wife of a very good friend of mine. And they both speak excellent Chinese because they grew up in China until they were young adults and left. And people with those language skills who hate communism and know the language will be saving a lot of lives, because we can do the – I'm already set up to intercept all – any radio communication that exists. And we'll be putting them to work to do translations of the radio intercepts and prisoners that we capture.
There shouldn't be any prisoners.
You can't interrogate a dead man. Prisoners are very valuable, Doug.
No, but you can... I'm not going to say what I was going to say.
Well,
I was involved with a stick in a head and a message.
Well, we need to think tactically here, not emotionally, Doug. And I agree with you with the emotions of wanting to do away with prisoners. But prisoners have, especially if they're an officer, they have great value because of the knowledge they have, and their value to be traded for maybe some of our prisoners. We don't execute prisoners. We make use of them. It's just another asset.
Okay. But do you see this happening? I'm friends with Dave Hodges as well, and I respect his work. And I know that there's some massive numbers south of us and also north of us of the Chinese right. military. And I know that we have, in this country,
don't leave out the Russians.
This is true, but
I've interviewed my friend Command Sergeant Major Dan Page on my show a number of times. And Command Sergeant Major Page, now Command Sergeant Major is a very special kind of person. There aren't very many of them in the entire Army. He got on a helicopter at MacDill Air Force Base in Florida and flew across the Gulf of Mexico to a Russian military base in Mexico. This is more than 20 years ago, Doug. And so let's not leave out the Russians. The Russians are playing a very dangerous game, because they know, like I do, that the Chinese ultimately intend to take them out as well. They want no opposition to being leaders of the world. That's the Chinese goal, is right. to be the leaders of the planet with no competition. And the Russians, after we're gone, the Russians clearly would be the only competition on the planet, and they intend to take them out also. We and the Russians should be natural allies, is what we should be. We're not at the moment. Now, it was revealed during the late Obama administration that top American generals and top Russian generals were communicating privately and secretly in the Middle East to make sure that World War III didn't start with all that craziness going on there, especially over Syria.
In Syria does factor into this, and I've often said that Syria would be responsible for the if World War III was going to start, it would start in Syria, not Iran. And however, Syria being a proxy state of Russia, and you're right about the communication, the backdoor communication.
Well, that's just smart.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing about, President Assad first of all, he's not a dictator. He was elected. Second of all, he had a very nice life as an eye doctor in London.
That's true.
You know, and he didn't need that. His father was sick. You know, blood is thicker than water, and he probably loves his native country, his home country. And at the request of his father, he left a country where everybody has a flush toilet and hot showers to go to a place where most people don't have a flush toilet and hot showers to help out the people he loves in his home country. He didn't need that.
That's
he had everything he would ever want as right. an eye doctor in London. But he did it anyway. And as leaders of third world Muslim countries goes, he's actually a pretty good guy. The whole thing about gassing his own people, that's a complete fantasy, an absolute fantasy.
But how many people really understand what happened there? You know, I mean.
It simply did not happen.
Yes.
At least not for anything that he had to do. And what an absolute geopolitical nightmare, which is what the Middle East has become since the Ottoman Empire was split up at the end of World War I because the Ottoman Empire picked the wrong side to be allied with. That would be Germany. If the Ottoman Empire had decided to become an ally of Great Britain, none of this would have happened because the Ottoman Empire would have remained intact as it had been for six centuries before that.
And we go, the Bolshevik Revolution, put that aside, the World War I, World War II, really, in some respects, it was just World War I 2.0.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so.
We're living, Doug, everybody on this planet is living the consequences of World War I right now.
Yes.
Right now.
Yep.
And that's not make believe, that's reality. All those countries in the Middle East, Jordan, Syria, Israel, Egypt, and the rest of them, Yemen, and United Arab Emirates, they were all one country, Turkey, for six centuries. And I wondered, and well, I didn't wonder, but people go, when I was in Special Forces, our area of operations was the Middle East, so I know more about that than most people. But we had our Secretary of State saying, oh, we got foreign fighters in Iraq fighting Americans from Egypt and from Yemen and from all these other places. And I'm sure that the people in Iraq that were thinking, what are these Americans talking about? These are our cousins. Because for six centuries, imagine, Doug, for six centuries, you could be born in Egypt, go to school in Turkey, marry a woman from Jordan, and live in Yemen. And that was done back and forth for six centuries. It was one country for six centuries.
Yep.
They're all related by blood and marriage. All those people are related by blood and marriage.
Very
well stated. In all those Middle East countries. And they have a common language and a common religion. And that didn't go away because World War I was lost by the Axis powers. It didn't go away.
And, you know, folks, this might seem like irrelevant history. It's not.
Now, we're living it. We're living those consequences.
That's right. Now, fast forward to Hillary Clinton and Libya. You know, that whole thing with Benghazi. People think that was overstated. No, it's not, because that had everything to do with Syria and the power structure, along with the Arab Spring, which was not a spontaneous uprising. It was orchestrated by the globalist elite, including Obama, to change the power structure in the Middle East. So all of this, we're living all of this today. And you said it well, man. I mean, you said it best, especially with respect to World War One.
I was put on alert twice. Me and 599 of my best friends in the 6th Special Forces Group, I was put on alert twice in 1969 to invade the Middle East, specifically Egypt. 600 men against millions of screaming Muslims.
Really?
We knew that would be a one-way trip. We knew that. Thank goodness it didn't happen. There's nothing new about this crisis in the Middle East. There's nothing new about it all. It goes back more than a century to the end of the World War I when the British military split up that part of the world and created countries that never existed before. And what was done was the British military went to different tribes in Saudi Arabia, Yemen, United Arab Emirates, and so forth, and they figured out who was the not the most powerful, but the next most powerful. As, well, let's look at Iraq specifically. And the colonial powers have been doing that for centuries. They picked out who was in charge of the minority, not the majority, and they put them in charge. Now, why would they do that, Doug? Because if you're a minority and you're in charge, you know you have to maintain power by any means necessary, or you're going to be smashed by the majority. And that's what happened in Iraq. That's what happened in Saudi Arabia. That's what happened in all these countries. They put the minority in charge so that the predictable outcome would take place. And we're still living the consequences of that, Doug.
So, John, and I'm not sure you and I have ever spoke about this, okay? In the grand scheme of things, from World War I to the present, 9/11 happened, obviously. All right. Now, where does that fit in, John Moore, thelibertyman.com? Where does 9/11 fit in?
They needed a Pearl Harbor. They right. needed it. You know, Americans had no desire to be involved in another war in Europe, let alone Asia. And they would have been quite satisfied to sit that one out. But they needed a Pearl Harbor to motivate. You know, I had friends that were Korean War veterans ready to sign up and go back in mm-hmm. on the 12th of September,
mm-hmm.
2001.
Yep.
You know,
think about that. And, Korean War veterans. Okay.
Korean War veterans.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know any Vietnam vets who were ready to go, but some of the Korean War guys were ready to go. They had the legislation for the Patriot Act already prepared and edited and re-edited and reviewed, ready to go. And they needed something that would make Americans drop their guard and allow things to happen that would never have happened otherwise. Nationwide.
Okay, so can we say that 9/11 or the Patriot Act was to 9/11 as the, we'll say, COVID passport, vaccination passport might be to the coronavirus?
That's a good analogy. We like analogies in our culture, Doug, and I like that analogy.
Okay.
I do like it.
Hmm.
Now, 5 weeks before 9/11/01, I was up in the office of Bill Shippers, attorney Bill Shippers in New York, in Chicago, overlooking Lake Michigan.
Yeah.
One of the prosecutors in the Clinton impeachment. Special Agent Robert Wright was there, FBI, the head of Judicial Watch. I was there as a final interview before I got hired to run the new Judicial Watch office in St. Louis, Missouri. Special Agent Wright was...
Wait a second. When were you there? Because I was in David Shipper's office here as well.
It was, I believe, the first week of August 2001.
Okay, I was there in 05, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. David Shipper's a brilliant guy. Brilliant guy. Go ahead.
Special Agent Robert Wright was part of a team investigating some international terrorists in, I believe it was Detroit. It may have been Chicago. It doesn't matter. These guys, you've probably seen in your local newspaper, Doug, the 50 cents off coffee coupons for the local supermarket.
Yes.
You know, if you put those in a printing press, you end up with a lot of money. And that's the kind of thing these guys were doing. So they were photocopying these coffee coupons and related type things and getting lots of money and sending it to the Middle East for terrorists is what they were doing. And he had the trial binder, and I've prepared trial binders myself, and so have you, Doug, for the presentation in the courtroom. And I got to stand there behind Special Agent Wright and look at this as he's flipping the pages. I'm thinking to myself, well, I'll never get a chance to see this again. And I'm thinking quietly to myself, if these FBI agents won't issue indictments, which is what the meeting was all about, was attempt to get the head of Judicial Watch to approach the Attorney General of the United States to get these indictments issued. What's happening in these other FBI offices? That was my thought 6 weeks before 9/11/01. It turned out why they weren't issuing indictments was because the FBI agents knew that once they got the trial binder worked up to that point, they could come to work 1 hour a day, keep it up to date, and go golfing the rest of the time. And once the indictments were issued, they had to start all over in another case where they actually had to work 8 hours a day, which they didn't want to do. It was no sinister plot. It was just simple laziness on the part of the FBI agents.
But only in that area.
It's part of the culture.
Part of the culture. Okay, that's fine.
Now, what we found out after 9/11/01, there was most of the men and women in the FBI are patriotic, hardworking men and women.
I used to think that, John. I don't think that anymore. That's just me.
I think at least they start out that way. If you can give me that much.
I'll give you that much. I'll give you that much.
But there was a female agent, I think it was in Wisconsin, who had attempted to report Middle Eastern men or man taking flight lessons, but only wanting to learn how to take off, not wanting to land. Similar reports coming out of Florida flight training on the part of FBI agents said the reports were made and ignored.
Absolutely.
There was a man who wrote a book talking about possible threats. It was published years before 9/11/01. It talked about the possibility of airplanes being flown into buildings by Muslim terrorists. I've got that in my archives. I don't have it here at hand. I didn't really think about that before the show started. But I want to leave our listeners with something that will help all of them, Doug. It's a free download at my website. I'm going to say it twice slowly because I don't want to get 20 emails. What was the name of that book, John? You scroll down the right side of my homepage. This is a book with 918 pages.
Eric, keep up with us here, brother.
Okay.
All right.
And here's the title. It's kind of I'll give the title and then a subtitle. The title is Matrix 3, Volume 1. Here's the subtitle. The psychosocial, chemical, biological, and electromagnetic manipulation of human consciousness by Valdemir Valerian. It's out of print. I've got original hard copy. It's a free download at my website. Here's what I suggest people do. They forward this to Office Depot, Office Max, one of those kind of places. Have them print it out on 3-hole punch paper, making sure the format doesn't have holes in the text, and put it in either one really big binder or two not so big binders. And you've got yourself an excellent research tool, Doug.
Okay. Excellent. Now this is at your, so let's deliver this again. Go to thelibertyman.com. All right. Scroll down and do what again?
Right next, there's a photograph of a young man with a mustache, Dr. Hardy Lineback. So when you see the photograph of the gentleman, there it is.
There it is.
With the mustache. Thank you, Eric. Right next to that on the right side is the link for the book, 918 pages. It's not the kind of book you sit down and read cover to cover. Obviously, you could do that. But here's why it's 918 pages, Doug. Typically, a book like this will give a footnote and say, this information came from such and such book at page such and such. What Valerian did was photocopy the original source material. That's why it's 918 pages. So you don't need to be going back and forth to the library to find original source material. He reprints it right there for you to read.
Got it. Okay. Which makes it handy. Thank you.
It's really handy. And you and I are both researchers. That's what homicide detectives are. We're researchers, among other things.
Yep.
And I really, as a trained paralegal, a trained researcher, former intelligence analyst, I really appreciate a book that either has extensive footnotes or what Valerian has done, which is almost nobody does because it makes the book really big and really heavy and really expensive, is reproduce the original source material.
And that's so helpful. Now, what will this work tell people?
It'll connect the dots.
Okay.
Now, right next to it, it plays into it. Now, imagine you're the head of you're the president of the Canadian Dental Research Association. You worked hard to get to this position. You're proud of what you've done. Your parents are proud of you, your siblings. Everybody went to high school is proud that they know you. And you find out that you've been lying to your entire country, and you have to apologize for these lies. The lies being that putting sodium fluoride in drinking water helps people, when in fact it causes great harm to people. That's right next to it there. That letter that Dr. Limebeck wrote, apologizing to his entire country.
Interesting. Okay. Wow.
And this is foundational to everything else we're talking about, because sodium fluoride reduces IQ. Sodium fluoride causes issues with every internal organ. Sodium fluoride, the outward sign that you've got fluorosis, fluoride poisoning, which is called fluorosis. My daughter came to live with me as a young adult and from Seattle. And she worked as a waitress, and she comes home about the second week, and she says, "Dad, how come so many St. Louisans have these little white spots on their teeth?"
I said, honey,
that's the outward sign of fluorosis, little white spots on your teeth. That means your body has been poisoned with fluoride. That's what that means.
Back in the 80s, and I'm not sure if it's still true today, a lot of doctors and pediatricians and some dentists prescribed fluoride tablets for children. I don't know if it's still going on today. I don't know.
Most likely. I don't know, but most likely.
I just never really understood that, especially with the amount of fluoride in the water, drinking water, you know, tap water and such. Yeah. And you're right about the IQ. Look at me. I was going to say I'm joking, but maybe not. Striving for triple digits. Wow. Okay. So folks, go to the Liberty Man, thelibertyman.com. The link will be in the program description box, and then just scroll down. So you have to scroll down a ways and then go ahead and at least save that reference.
Well,
document.
We've literally changed the bodies of our people.
Yes.
It weakens your bones. Now, the church I was going to at the time in Metro St. Louis had the athletic director for a very large suburban high school. And I told him about, he was probably in his mid-30s at the time, and I told him about this, about the weak bones. And he's listening to me. He's thinking, oh, here's more of John Moore's black helicopter conspiracy stuff. But he respected me enough to talk to the older coaches who had been there for decades. And here's what the older coaches, the football coaches, told the athletic director. They said, "Coach, we can't push these football players like we used to 40 years ago, 30 years ago, because if we do, they will break bones." Early 1980s, U.S. Army had to change the foot gear for everybody in basic training because so many young men in basic training, and women both, were breaking bones doing the same routine things that they'd done running since World War II. So what's different? The foot gear was the same. The running surfaces were the same. The amount of running was the same. What was different? That was the bones and the feet of the young soldiers. So they had to go to running shoes to prevent so many bones from being broken because of the sodium fluoride weakening the bones of our young people.
Interesting.
And that continues. That's reality right now.
Actually, yes. Yes, it is. Wow. Okay. John, we only have about 10 minutes left of the show, and I got to get your take on this. Just changing directions here because, you know, people are going to be talking about this throughout the week. And, well, of course, you know, there was a shooting of a Dante Wright.
That's just the beginning.
I know.
That's a warm-up.
This is a warm-up. So right. So this Dante
Practice
Wright.
Session.
Right. You're correct.
When the Officer Chauvin's trial is over, it doesn't matter if he's convicted or not. That's when the riots start nationwide.
Right. This is kind of like the you're right, the practice session for this. But here's what I want to get your take on. Okay, now this is the latest Black Lives Matter violence. Okay, in this small town, what is it, Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, near Minneapolis. Okay, so this Dante Wright, he was wanted on a warrant when he attempted to flee all right, from police. He was shot. He drove a distance before crashing into some others. But what people aren't really getting is the fact that this was not some media darling. I mean, this has shades of George Floyd. This has shades of Trayvon Martin all behind it. It's the same script, different players. If we can pull up, this has happened on Saturday. If we can pull up the, and I just want to show you this, which is it here. Andy No, the Twitter feed, because he put up.
He's been reporting Antifa and Black Lives Matter for about a year.
Right.
Doing great.
So here's his, now Facebook obviously was scrubbed. These pictures were taken down, but here's this little darling, this innocent darling, Dante Wright, some images there. All right. Gang signs, money, you know, of course Facebook took this off. And if you want to scroll down, Eric, you can see like, okay, even more. I think there might be additional images below that. And yeah, keep going. So you know, the media wants you to think, wants everyone to think, this is some poor victim that was brutally murdered by police, and the riots are justified, the looting. And hey, I need a new pair of sneakers. Anyway, there it goes. Oh, my goodness. There it is, folks. So you're right. This is kind of the warm-up for the for what's coming.
Well, he's the young man was clearly doing his best to emulate his gangster heroes.
Hmm. Well, and if we want to just take a little view, in the next link I sent to you, Eric, is just maybe just select one and you can see what the result of this is. I think these are all Twitty. Yeah, listen to me. It's the sodium fluoride kicking in. this is a thread reader compilation of and it'll be in the program description box at hagmanreport.com. This is a some images and such from a Twitter feed. But my goodness, you talk about burn, loot, and murder.
Burn, loot, murder, yeah.
This is it. And let's not forget, among other things, too, Patrice Kahn Cullors, the trained Marxist, the head of Black Lives Matter, or co-founder there, you know, four properties in Los Angeles and elsewhere. Four properties. He doesn't believe in, you know, capitalism, but four properties, the head of Black Lives Matter. But anyway, I digress. But yeah, here's what's happening now. But you're right. This is only a warm-up, isn't it? And it's coming to
a neighborhood near you.
Coming to this, yeah.
The speculation is the trial will end early summer. I guess that means around Memorial Day. I don't know. These type of events are always worse in the hot weather. That's we have a decades of experience with that. So, yeah, if this had been a white guy with a outstanding warrant, it may have made local news for that one report, and that would have been the end of it. That's all it would have been.
Yeah,
but because he's a mulatto young man. It's made national news and the riots are started and all the rest of it.
Yeah, he was half white, if I'm not mistaken. So mulatto is the correct term. And, you know, people not now watch people, their heads are going to explode. How dare you use that term? It's kind of like using the term Negro.
Well,
you know,
either we use what's in the English dictionary or we don't. I mean, you know, yeah. I speak English, so I'm going to use English words that are in the English dictionary.
You are so formal, John Moore. I love it. You are such a, that's a compliment, by the way.
Thank you.
But boy, you're.
I've spent a lot of time on the hot seat, which means under oath, Doug, and I'm sure you have also.
Yeah. And,
and a lot of times when I couldn't talk because I was in the courtroom and I had to make quick little, cryptic notes for the trial attorney to get his attention. I never did a trial with a woman. I'm not sure what that would have been like, but I was a second chair in quite a few murder cases.
I got to ask you this though, because I really think I'm in a club by myself. Did you ever throw a TV at a judge in a courtroom?
There was times when I wanted to, but I never did. No, sir.
No, I actually did that once, and I'm surprised I wasn't arrested.
I guess it didn't hit the judge. Maybe why you weren't arrested.
No, I couldn't throw it that far, but it was a little monitor about this big, and the judge. I was testifying, and this is a true story. Okay, and you know what? I wear this badge of anger proudly. All right, I really do. I got sworn in, and I'm on the witness stand, and I'm explaining to the judge, you know, this was an undercover operation in which I was involved, and I explained the pretext for my undercover assignment, I explained the intricacies of the or the elements of the undercover operation, and he looked at me. It's a true story. The judge looked at me. He says, "Get out of my courtroom." Now, this guy was like 125 years old, all right, the judge. And I looked over, excuse me? He said, "Get out of my courtroom! Right now, get out! Remove him! I don't want liars in my courtroom!" And I mean, you know what? Both sides, the defense and prosecution, "Objection, objection, objection! Your Honor, what's going on?" You know, everybody was yelling, and the stenographer was going, "Oh, man, what's going on?" So anyway, it's a funny story. Okay.
You mean the court reporter? Go ahead.
But yeah, the court reporter. Thank you. You know, she was like, she didn't know what to do. And,
I can imagine.
The attorney says, what's the problem, judge? And the judge says, he lied, and I don't want liars in my courtroom. Meaning I lied because I presented myself, you know, in this undercover operation.
Right. Somebody else. Right.
He says, "Get out of my courtroom." I had to get out of his courtroom. So I left the stand. I'm walking by and I took the TV that was on the thing that they rolled in, and I went and I took it and I threw it at the bench, and it actually landed like 2 feet before, you know, it was my TV, so I could do it because I had to bring my own in that case.
Right.
But boy, I'll tell you what, people's life. And here's the thing. Okay. So, I left the courthouse, and this was in New York State. I left there and I'm thinking, man, I'm going to, you know, when am I going to get stopped? I'm just waiting for like lights in the back, you know, I got the hell out of the county really quick because it was a county trial. But the bottom line is, in the end, the judge was forced into retirement, and he was, or facing ethics charges for that little outburst. I don't know why I said that.
As well, he should have.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, this thing was written up in journals. Okay. What happened?
I bet.
Some fond memories. Fond memories.
Well, the first lawsuit I worked on as part of the defense was, is now taught in law schools as the classic federal antitrust lawsuit. United States of America versus the Georgia Optometric Association and the American Optometric Association. That lawsuit kept me busy the winter of 72-73. That's when I decided I didn't want to be a paralegal in that capacity anymore. And I was introduced to the biggest detective agency in St. Louis. And it all began right then when I was being trained by an experienced investigator old enough to be my father. And he was driving the exact same green Camaro that Rockford was when I was in that training. Now, so I'm 25 years old, and I'm riding around St. Louis learning the arts and the skills, and I'm thinking to myself, man, this is really neat. I'm with Rockford. And
did he have a business card machine in the back seat? Remember that?
No comment. Uh-huh. But, you know, things were primitive back then. We didn't have video cameras. We had these primitive 8mm, 16mm movie cameras. And,
oh, yeah.
And we could get anybody's full credit report from TransUnion back then.
Oh, yeah.
By the way.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. and the things you could do
different.
For the things, the information you get for a 20, you know, I'm telling you.
Well, this is all above board.
But, okay. Yeah. Yes.
The law hadn't changed yet. I could get anybody's complete credit report, Doug. Anybody's.
And then they had to go and ruin it by making laws and stuff. You know?
Well, we still got workarounds, and we can get what we need. But yes. You know that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where it all began. And it's been a great career, and I wouldn't change a thing.
I'm going to tell you what, I want to make a correction. That was a Firebird, if I remember correctly, Rockford Files. But, because I had a Camaro at the time.
Was it a Firebird, not a Camaro? I mean, they're basically the same car with different trim. But
Yeah. But,
is that what it was?
Okay. I got to tell you, John, one of these days you and I are going to have to sit down and, off air.
If we ever go back to live conferences, with Steve Quayle and so forth, I've known Steve since about 1978, but he's promising me. We'll see.
The man, the myth, the legend, as I call him, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. John, thanks for joining me this Monday.
I'm at 97, not 77, but anyway.
Sorry, I got it. All right, brother, take care of yourself.
Thank you, Doug.
See you later.
We'll do this next week.
All right. Folks, that'll do it. Have a great night. God bless each and every one of you. Have a good night.